Chefs at Johnson & Wales and in thousands of restaurants around the globe will tell you that the hottest name in hand-forged Japanese-style knives at an affordable price is Forged to Table. The company, founded in 2017 by Johnson & Wales alum Noah Rosen, when he was still a student, is dedicated to the pursuit of the perfect knife for culinary students, working chefs, and home cooks alike. His guiding motto was, and still is, uncompromising quality at a fair price. Though Noah is no longer a student, he is still dedicated to that same pursuit. His flagship blade, the 8-inch Gyoto chef's knife, was developed and is now has a cult following among kitchen professionals across the country. This is the time where we always throw a little Forged to Table story in here. Jamie, you said you have one. What's going on with you and Forged to Table?
Well, I mean, I think I'm one of these cult followers because I've been using this 8-inch Gyoto like crazy lately at home. It didn't even make it to work because me and my husband just use it for everything here at the house. Like literally everything, like cutting chicken, cutting vegetables. I love it. It's just the size is just so perfect.
Yes. Normally cults very bad. When it comes to Forged to Table, cults, very good.
Very good.
And like, listen, basically what you're saying is you were so selfish. You kept the knife for yourself, which I can truly appreciate.
It was supposed to make it to work. It never did.
What are you going to do? Anyway, you can order your own Forged to Table knife, whichever model from their spectrum of choices suits your kitchen needs right now at forgedtotable.com. Culinary Now listeners, this podcast, can also enter the promo code Culinary Now, all one word, with their order to receive 15% off their purchase. 15% is massive when it comes to buying knives, which are
notoriously
expensive. Well, good knives, that is. Forged Table knives are also available at the JWU Providence Student Store, but you don't get that discount, so shop online. It gets delivered directly to your house, your dorm room, wherever you reside. Be sure to follow Forged Table on Instagram for great recipes and from their test kitchen, and to keep yourself in the loop on exciting new knives, products, and gear, plus those rare, I guess not so rare, giveaway opportunities that you will sneak up upon. Forged Table is proud to support the development of new and aspiring cooks and chefs everywhere and to join in the effort to create a better industry for us all. Thanks, Forged Table, for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome, everyone, to the Culinary Now podcast. I'm Matt Britt.
And I'm Jamie Schick.
And today on the pod, we have the one and only Chef Bill Lenway. Chef, how are you today?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
Jamie and I are so excited to talk to you because you're just one of the most fun people. And not only the fact that you're wearing overalls right now, which apparently you're doing some plumbing work later today, but like I appreciate you taking the time on a Friday, which is incredibly busy for us, to sit here. But if I can start just by letting you say hello and introduce yourself, like what do you do? Who are you? Like why are we talking to you today? go ahead.
Well, so currently, I do teach at Johnson & Wales. I teach in nutrition, and that is going to be coming up later. I'm sure we'll have discussions on nutrition. But also, as our side gig, because many of us have side gigs through passions or other needs, my side gig is Not Another Food Truck. And that is, it is evolving, but it started as a hot dog cart here in Providence. So
I hear hot dog cart. And like I'm gonna touch that third rail right now. I hear hot dog cart, and then I also hear that you teach nutrition at Johnson & Wales. And you know, it might be fair to say that those two things are generally not talked about in the same conversation often, unless they're talked about in the sense that hot dogs are not very nutritious. How do you go from one to the other and back, you know, with a clean conscience? Like how do you do that, Chef?
Oh, totally. I mean, I would never serve anything that I wouldn't eat myself, too. But that has a lot of facets to it. So, first off, we know that hot dogs would never be considered a health food, right? We have multiple issues going on. You know, it's a highly processed food, the sodium content, nitrates, things like that. But on the other hand, It's kind of rough to actually criminalize the food, and we really need to look at our behaviors. So actually, as I was becoming a registered dietitian, we have to go through an internship, and my internship actually focused on eating disorders. And in the world of eating disorders, you're dealing with chronic overeating, or you're dealing with fear foods, you're dealing with anorexia nervosa or purging issues too. And one thing we always said was there's no good food and no bad food. So we would even tell people, look, just go out and have a drink. Go out and have a drink with your friends. It's not going to kill you to go out and have a drink with your friends. But there are ways that we can abuse food. There are ways that we can abuse a lot of things, right? And so, the hot dog, like, it's classic Americana. It's a beautiful thing, but it's not something you want to eat every day. You know, it's like you don't want to eat at a fast food chain every day. You don't want to eat potato chips every day. But once in a while, it's really nice. And on the other hand, if I were selling raw broccoli and I said I only ate raw broccoli for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, nothing to dip it in, only raw, never cooked, never blanched, and always had it, you'd think I'm totally nuts, even though broccoli is considered a good for you food. So like there are ways to spin this, right? But there are ways to look at it that, sometimes it's just nice to just have yourself a root beer and a hot dog.
I could not agree more. But you mentioned something that was important, and it's a classic American thing. And, knowing how connected you are to this, like, listen, I love hot dogs. Like, I'm not going to lie. I agree. You can't eat them every day. But why is the hot dog so gosh darn American? Like, what about it makes it perfect for, the U.S.?
I think a big part of it, too, is we've all grew up with hot dogs. Like, I sent you previously a commercial for Chevy, baseball hot dogs, apple pie, Chevrolet, some things that are, define Americana, right? And you think about, like baseball. Baseball is considered like the great American sport, right? What do they serve at baseball? Because they've always served hot dogs. And hot dogs go back, like into the 1800s. I think of it as like the OG of American street food. It right. is just, it's the thing that's been out there, So, there's a whole history in anything in the United States that we've developed as a culture, whether it's, the barbecue or the Cajun Creole cuisine or whatever it is. It's always a mixture of who was brought here, what grows here, what is already here, different conditions, et cetera, but, a big part of this is our very diverse immigration. And so when you take a look at that era, there were a lot of European immigrants. And when you take a look at Polish or German food, the sausage is, of lots and lots of different varieties. The sausage is just a standard fare, and it's a way to use things up. We used to have to be a lot more economic and efficient with our food. So we wouldn't just take the prime little cuts. We're utilizing everything. And it was a great way to do it. So I feel like it just, it fed in through our history, through who was immigrating at the time, through necessity, economics, all of that came together. And we had a specific type of sausage that came up. And whether they claim it's from Frankfurt, Germany, or or it's from Vienna or Wien, like the Wiener, Vienna, Austria. It's also an American, a very American thing.
I think you're right. It is American, and I know a lot of people grew up eating them, as you mentioned. But you did touch on sausages, and what if you had to narrow it down? What would be the key differences between a sausage and a hot dog, or are they the same in any ways?
Well, a hot dog just being a type of sausage, and we can say it's very specific, but there are so many different types of hot dogs because, you get the chicken ones and you get pork hot dogs, or you get pork and beef or all beef. But, it's like going back to Chevy, all Corvettes are Chevys, but not all Chevys are Corvettes. So it's a specific flair, just being a certain type of sausage. But it has similarities to other types of sausage, too. And I always think about when people ask me to describe what a knockwurst is. So like during Oktoberfest, I serve other sausages from the cart. And the knockwurst, a big, fat, smoky, I use all beef, local ones from up in Massachusetts too. And I'm just like, it's a hot dog on steroids. The thing's huge. It's smoky. It's like a meat emulsion. So it has that nice soft, soft texture. And they always come out plump and firm. They don't, you know, like the texture of bratwurst is very different. The texture of like blood sausage, very different too. So, you know, typically they have a fine texture and smoky. And there are a lot of varieties that are all beef. Like I use an all beef variety. And a little student project on the side too, that they started in a hot dog cart and they're building up their business too, Bun Buds. And they use foot long beef and pork ones too, because they're fun, you know, big old foot long hot dog. So
that's interesting because, you know, I love that idea that, you know, all Corvettes are Chevys and not all Chevys are Corvettes. Cause I mean, all hot dogs are sausages, but not all sausages are hot dogs. It's the perfect analogy and it couldn't be more American. I want to take us to somewhat more of a controversial issue before maybe we talk about like what makes like the right hot dog good. One thing I hear all the time, and I actually have conversations about this, which is pretty disturbing that I'm talking about hot dogs on a regular basis, but I will say that it's important, is for you, chef, would you consider a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, God. You know, yes. Even though it doesn't look like one, but think about this. Like you get a hoagie, you get a hero, you get something on a long split roll. It's something that's, you know, filling up between bread. I think really when you take a look at the origin of the sandwich in the legendary lore, it was, what was it, like the fourth Earl of Sandwich had to do a 24-hour gambling binge and couldn't leave the table. So he needed something that he could pick up with his hands without stopping playing cards or whatever the legend is. But it was the idea that you could pick this up in bread. And the same thing with like sausage fenders, like, you know, hand them out on a fork or in something that you can carry around. And so in that functional way, I would say, yeah, it's a sandwich. It doesn't look like what people consider a sandwich maybe, but it is between two pieces of bread, and that bread has a filling and condiments, and just like any other sandwich. And, you know, hilariously, when I looked that video up that I sent you last night, what is America's favorite sandwich? The hot dog in that Chevy commercial. And I was like, there it is, folks. Like, you know, if the internet says so, it is so, right? But if YouTube saith so, it is so.
On this sandwich, so I'm curious, with all these parts of this hot dog sandwich we have going on, what makes it so good? Like, what are the secrets to make it like perfect for you? Because is it the bread? Is it the toppings? Is it the dog itself? Like, what goes into making it so good? Or what is your quintessential version of it?
I'll start with the sausage. I think that's the most important piece. Even if you have a good sausage in a crappy bun, it's still a pretty good sausage. And it is the star of the plate. I mean, there are some important distinctions for the bun. But
yeah, I want to talk about this. I want to talk about the bun when we get there, for sure.
Yeah. But really, like, for me, I use soubrettes from New York, New Jersey, and that's the one that you're going to find in Madison Square Garden and all the hot dog carts. I use a skin on. I have to use a skin on. They cost 150%, you know, the price of the skinless, because they tend to explode. There tends to be a lot of waste. But for me, there's just no replacement for that at all. Like it has to be a good quality dog, and I've tried a lot of dogs. Like, seriously, I think I made myself sick when I started this venture, trying every hot dog out there and narrowed it down to a few brands. But really, you know, I find that quality of hot dogs, the thing that I really labor over, making sure that I don't overcook them and blow them up, making sure that, you know, that quality is there. And then, I feel like people place more importance on the condiments sometimes than the bun. Even the bun takes backstage, and it doesn't have to, but, beyond that, you know, I mean, some people are just like, I'll just take ketchup. I'll just take mustard, or go New York style, you know, with like the soubrette's onion sauce or something. But some of my hot dogs on the cart are obscene with their toppings, and that really defines that hot dog. But yeah, that's, I feel like, you know, really people focus on that sausage and those toppings.
I am a classic. I'm like a ketchup and mustard person. I don't go crazy. I don't do like onions or relish or anything like that. But I do want to go back to the bun. Is it toasted or untoasted? Is homemade better? Brioche? Is it the dollar? Is it the dollar packages that you get like six for a dollar at the grocery store? Where do we land on this bun? Because being a pastry chef, my inclination is homemade brioche style would be better, but maybe it's not.
Jamie, you said toasted, untoasted. I want to throw another one in there. What about steamed? Like, what about that beautiful, like, sort of, like, I think about a hot dog cart, right? It's like half of the, or two thirds of the hot dog cart is dogs, and then the other third is those buns, right? Then that they come out, and they're almost like
steamer.
Steamer.
I don't know about a sticky, sticky bread. Like, why would you steam it?
Let's before you crucify me for saying something like that, let's let the professional answer the question.
Default to the expert. You're
right. Oh my god! So, like locally, there's a hot dog. Well, it's been shrinking, but there's a small hot dog chain locally here, and they get their own bakery buns, and they tend to be like too crusty, too firm for the hot dog. I have been struggling to find the perfect bun, and that perfect bun is different for different types of applications too. And so when it comes to just a standard New York style dog, I go with I like the New England top split, because with those sides you have a little bit less crust, but it really takes the steam on, and I steam those. I've got a little steamer on the side of the cart. Even in the summer, I'll throw in that steamer and I'll slap the lid a few times to pump it with a little steam to just soften up a little bit. You don't want to oversteam them because they will fall apart. They'll be mushy, horrible. Like, some people are like, oh my God, you want what? $5, $7 for a hot dog? It's so expensive. Like, you're used to eating Oscar Mayer in a soggy little bun, and the thing's 4.5 inches. Like, that's not my hot dog. I pay attention to quality. People don't always even notice. I've tried toasted. I've tried griddled. The health department won't let me really griddle on a cart. But I've just tried it, and I felt the results weren't as good. I've tried brioche. That did not go over well with customers, plus the price was considerably more. And personally, I didn't like the brioche as much as I thought I would. You griddle it and put it on a lobster roll, it's a must. I would not put that on a Wonder Bread roll. And I've tried pretzel rolls too, which were very expensive and special order, and then got back ordered for Oktoberfest. So that became a nope, we're not doing that this year. But the problem is that when you load that thing with sauerkraut, and I put special kraut on top of the big sausage, like, it gets really, really soggy. So you need something that's going to be able to take that up. And sometimes the bun defines the type of hot dog. Because I always think about Chicago dog, and we don't really care about Chicago dogs here in Rhode Island. But, I mean, anywhere else, it's like one of the best hot dogs in the United States. And that must have a poppy seed bun, that must have a crust, a more durable crust than just like the soft rolls that you would find from like Kalis or Fryhofer or the, you know, typical hot dog bun suppliers around here. But hey, I'm looking for a bakery that could do it for a good price and give me a slightly better quality bun. I've been searching and struggling. It's been a little frustrating. There's not enough love. I agree, Jamie. There's not enough love for hot dog buns in this world. There's not enough love for hot dogs sometimes, you know, especially in Rhode Island. Like, we like the hot wiener, you know, we got to have the meat sauce and the celery salt, and, you know, so they're like, what is this? But yeah, we need some better buns, dang it.
There is no, and I think anyone who's listening to this would agree that there is no question that you are obsessed in a very good way with everything hot dog. I mean, the fact that you can like go through this timeline of like all the things you've tried and how that's landed with the guests and how it's landed with the cost and how it's been bad. I mean, it's truly a passion project for you. So I want to ask a question that sort of takes it back a little bit, is what was it, just your love of hot dogs that made you want to start this cart, or was it something else that sort of prompted the sort of, you know, the creation of your food cart? I mean, which is obviously really, really embedded with hot dogs.
Well, that's kind of a complicated question too. You know, just to start things off, I used to be, like, most of my career I was a private club chef, and we pay a lot of attention to a lot of little details, and we also have to have a wide variety of things. So no matter what I decide my tangent, my specials for the weekend will be, I've got to go all in and come up with something amazing for my clientele. So I came into this thinking, well, I could do pretty much anything. And I look around and I was like, I could do tacos. I could do tacos better than, you know, most places around here. And then I look at myself in the mirror. I'm like, you don't look like you should be doing tacos, man. So I'm like, no, you know, leave that to someone else. And, you know, I think, you know, the same thing with, like, you know, fried noodles, fried rice, things like that. It's like, I could do all these things dynamite. And I was considering for years and years to get a food truck, partially due to passion and partially because, you know, I wanted a second stream of income. And so I was going through this. I was working like at the Home Depot in the tool department, you know, hence the overalls, right? And, you know, setting up my plan to dominate the world. And my plan to dominate in the world included like a $200,000, $250,000 loan to get a food truck up and running. And when we teach 9 months out of the year, you don't have a lot of time to get out there and hustle to pay that loan. And I fought with this and I fought with this. And, you know, the funny thing is, like we mentioned nutrition, here I'm trying to make money and people aren't always concerned about nutrition at the top of it. But I also do nutrition and public health work. And that's the stuff that we beg for money. We go for grants. And I did some work in Minneapolis and they gave me a lump sum. And that lump sum just happened to be enough to buy a hot dog cart, just clean, free, which, you know, when you start a business, you know you have a lot more expenses. So it's been a long road. But getting over that hump and just trying to carry the rest out of my paycheck as I slowly grow, that was a big deciding factor for me in hot dogs. And that hot dog cart has an umbrella on top. It's not enclosed. The health department has special rules. And you can only heat pre-cooked foods. Like hot dogs, right? I can't saute onions on it. I can't grill buns. I can't do this. I can't do that. So we have to go within what is allowed by the health department. And then I think, well, what compromises am I willing to make? Well, we eventually found we could do other things on there. Like, you know, well, you got to talk to your local health department to figure out what they'll let you do. I probably shouldn't say too much, but, you know, we could do like dumplings. If they're pre-made dumplings, then we could boil those things up, you know, or like, yeah, nothing says you can't shuck an oyster on there if the health department's cool with it. But that really, the regulation defined where I went with this. And that was the starting point for it.
That's so interesting. And it speaks to something that it's very, I'm going to say responsible, like in the sense that like you knew what the restrictions were and that guided your process. And I think that that could resonate with students who, you know this as well as we do. They have like these huge, lofty, like really astronomical goals in life. And like, we want that, like we want them to shoot for the stars, but to be able to have that ability to sort of stop, survey what's going on around you and then make a decision that's right in that moment. You know, having lived that yourself, I think that has to be incredibly powerful to share that story with your students.
I was going to say, I know that you work with students as your business partners. Do you want to talk a little bit? Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Cause I think that is so awesome what you are doing.
Sure. What you say about students having lofty goals. And, you know, I did in culinary school too. You know, like I really got into garmanger. I really loved like highly ornate, gaudy, you know, decorated, labor intensive food, but there's not a big market for that stuff. I mean, the only place I can think of is you go to like Mackinac Island at the Grand Hotel, you might see a spread like that. But, you take a look at Noma, like this idea that fine dining is not sustainable. Michelin star restaurants, how many people are working for free at these places? Like it's, you know, it's an amazing experience, but we can use a lot of these principles. And I try to carry in quality, attention to detail, right? You know, good service, all this stuff can be applied to a higher volume, lower price market. And when you take a look at
you know, from through the 60s, 70s, as we spend more and more and more of our food money away from home as opposed to at home, fine dining has been a smaller and smaller portion of that. And I mean, casual, fast casual has been mm-hmm. the fastest growing segment. This is where the money's at. And I mean, you know, we have goals and dreams and all of that too. And every once in a while, we get that stark reminder that, oh yeah, we do this for a living too. We got to make money. So you can have an amazing burrito, a killer, like the best tacos out there. There's no shame in that. A taco is simple, but it's a beautiful, beautiful thing if you do it right. And to be that one person that really sweats the details and cares enough to do it right, that's huge. So I was trying to find a few students with that passion. And so I grabbed two students, and they were interested in this idea of, you know, maybe doing this for a summer. And then just surprisingly, one day I was on Craigslist, of all things, if anybody remembers what that is. and I saw an identical hot dog cart to mine, and it was a pretty killer deal. So I got some cash, grabbed that thing, emailed the student, said, what do you think? They're like, oh, we're in. And we immediately did a couple of events on, you know, my cart. Then we got that one ready. They started doing frat parties and such, and just went with it. And I mean, sadly, we never met our sales goals all year. We never met our sales goals once, right? We had lofty goals, high expectations, and it's a hard business. It's hard for marketing. Like, they went out there and they busted their butts and, you know, just grinding away for next to nothing. And, but that's the thing. It's like, you put the effort in and you grind away with the hopes that you're going to get something out. You're going to build and you're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's not always this, you know, exchange. Like, you could do all the work in the world and not get the payback, right? And sometimes you do, but you aren't going to win that lottery unless you buy a ticket. You aren't going to get that opportunity unless you try and you get out there and you bust your butt. Absolutely bust your butt. And that's what they did. And then they took that money and then started to reinvest it and, you know, worked on building another larger enclosed trailer that can do more. But along the way, they got bored. They did some TikToks. This stuff mm-hmm. started going viral locally. Somebody in Fall River saw it and said, hey, this is what Fall River needs. And just happened to have some space available in one of his buildings and has a very strong passion for mentorship and food service and all this. And he came out and found him at a brewery and said, hey, what do you think? And of course, at first I'm like, well, be really careful going to this with your, you know, your eyes open, all that. And then I met the guy and I was like, this guy is, he's awesome. He's, you know, he's got that you know, he's going to be a great mentor for him. So they are going to be opening up a brick and mortar here in April. And they haven't even graduated yet, but they already got the lease. It's awesome.
That is unbelievable. I mean, I hear stories like that, and I think, like, it's like church. Like, it's like amen. Like that's like that's the good stuff. Because, you know, like, one of our sponsors for the podcast also was a JWoo student that started his own forged knife company during that. And like, I don't want to take away from the story you told, but like, to hear these people, like, who are going through college, which, you know, we might paint as like the best experience of your life. Going through college as an 18, 19 year old is incredibly difficult because you're becoming a human and you have to, and then have full college work thrown on top of that. But to do that and start a business is not only entrepreneurial, but like, just badass. You know, it's like, you know. This podcast is sponsored by Azaluna Foods. Azaluna Foods is a regenerative food company that focuses on healthy, nutritious, and sustainably sourced ready-to-eat meals. Their signature bone broth is one of the top sellers and favorites of us on the podcast. They also have ready-to-eat foods developed by chefs and nutritionists that provide convenience and nutrition with a balance of macro and micronutrients. These meals prioritize artisanal flavors using responsibly sourced ingredients. Check them out at azalunafoods.com. So, you know, as we you know, kind of switch gears a little bit, I mean, your passion rings through so much. And I think about, you know, like, hot dogs are obviously iconic to Americans, but they also, you know, they also touch home on an individual level. And my question to you, because I have one that I could share, and maybe Jamie as well, but so this is a question for the group, is what is your favorite memory, personal memory of a hot dog? Because like, I know what mine is, and I want to tell that, but I'll ask you first, Bill. It's like what, when you think back, like what stands out?
I'm split in two on that.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, so I have two very distinct, like, totally in love with hot dog moments that I remember from my childhood. And one was probably when I was 6 or 7 years old, my father brought home from work a box of sausages. And he said, these are special. And I was like, what are they? They're hot dogs, but they're really good hot dogs. And we opened them up, and here's, you know, instead of kind of that Oscar Mayer wiener, that little short, you know, straight, plump Frank, he opened this thing up, and here they're curved, and on the ends they have that little, you know, that mm-hmm. little flat spot, and then they're twisted together. And he opened that thing, and I could just smell that smokiness. And it was unbelievable. And what I did when I was a kid was, you know, we used to build bonfires outside. We had this huge yard full of oak trees and just the smell of oak burning. And I'd be sitting out there roasting those, you know, beautiful hot dogs on a spit over the fire like that right there. I mean, talk about a killer sausage. And you work a little hard for it. It's like all the garden vegetables that I did all summer. You know, I didn't leave a pea laying on that plate. Like you invested. And so, like, that was one of those things. Like, you can get a really high-quality sausage. And I grew up in, like, a German-Austrian home, too. So, like, you know, we dealt with sausage a lot. And the other would be something my mother would do. And she would take the hot dog. She would split it partway through, stuff it with cheddar cheese, wrap it with bacon, and then broil that thing, glaze it with barbecue sauce. And that's actually on the menu right now. And we, you know, we can't do it that same way. So we have to put like bacon bits and shredded cheese. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a throwback to my mother making those. And, you know, they do those in shopping carts in San Francisco on a sheet pan with Sternos in the yeah. car. Like, you know, it's all over the place. Amazing. But I just remember eating that, you know, just thinking that was like the best way that I'd ever had a hot dog before while I'm sitting there watching, you know, reruns of Star Trek with my brother eating a hot dog, just amazed at how cool the world is, you know? So those
are awesome. Oh, no, because that cut the hot dog open and then grow, that's a very West Coast thing. Yeah, it's like, I have two. I'll say one and then Jamie, I'll throw it to you and maybe if you have any hot dog memories. But I remember, and it's funny because they usually are connected to a parent or, you know, a grandparent or what have you. And my father died when I was very, very young. So my grandfather actually used to take me from New Hampshire, where I lived, down to Boston. We would take the commuter rail from Lowell to, you know, Boston. Then we'd take the Green Line to Fenway Park. And we would go and we would eat hot dogs and watch the Red Sox, at the time, lose, like, every year. But I like, listen, what you're talking about, like these really beautiful, smoky, curved artisan hot dogs is not what they served in, you know, 1992 at Fenway Park. They served like literally the shittiest hot dogs ever and charged a premium for them. But it's funny that like doesn't matter that it was crappy quality. It was the experience of eating it and watching a baseball game with someone who cares about you. It's like that's iconic for me. Like that, that's bulletproof. You cannot touch that moment. Jamie, what about you? Any hot dog memories?
Yeah, actually, but they're not as beautiful as both of yours. But for me, it just reminds me of summer cookouts with my family and my cousins, who I only got to see like once a year. And I grew up, like, we would have hot dogs in the summer, we'd have hot dogs and mac and cheese for dinner, but they were like the Oscar Mayer, like, cheap hot dogs. They weren't fancy or anything, and they were in the $6 for $1 bag of buns, yeah. And they were never toasted. They were always just, like, out of the bag, and it was just ketchup and mustard. Actually, I don't even think I like mustard back then, but it was the toppings were plain, but it was being with my cousins and my aunts and uncles, who we only really got together once a year. So for me, that kind of stands out. And I took a break from hot dogs for a little while too. And I was into turkey hot dogs. And I think that's still kind of the camp I'm in if I eat them. But I haven't revisited a real hot dog in my adult life, I don't think. Now that I'm processing it.
Processing.
Or something.
Yeah, no, Jamie, I would argue that that is beautiful because I think about my own childhood. And I would imagine that everyone who's probably in our age range experienced hot dogs and mac and cheese combined in some way. Yeah. And I think about my own kids. I think about my own kids. They are obsessed with mac and cheese. They're obsessed with hot dogs. And I'm honestly now afraid that if I ever combined them and gave them together, their brains would just break. I think that would be a moment. I don't know how they would react. The last thing, and this is also, in Jamie and I both love the southern coast of Maine. We go there from time to time. Yeah. York, Algonquin, it's a very special place. And on Route 1 in York, and this is a shout out, there is an iconic hot dog place. And this is Bill, to your point, these are few and far between because it's not always the sexiest thing to do. and this restaurant, if you can call it that, it's called Flo's. It's, if you know hot dogs on the East Coast, you've probably heard of it. They serve steamed dogs, steam buns, and they put hot pepper relish and mayonnaise on their hot dogs. Mm. And it sounds gross, but if you try it and you still think it's gross, I say this very rarely, you're wrong. It is awesome. Awesome. And if you are up there, you can get, you can order Moxie as a beverage. It's you mentioned root beer earlier, but ordering two dogs, mayo and hot pepper relish with a can of Moxie is that is America right there. 100%.
I don't think I've ever had Moxie.
It's like birch beer. It's kind of it's good. It's good. I don't know if that's the accurate classification, but it's the closest analogy I can make to it. It's kind of, Ted Williams drank it, so it has to be good. So finally, Chef, I want to just switch over to a little bit, although this was fun all in all, I have a little hot dog trivia that I'd like to throw at you because clearly your understanding and knowledge of all things wiener is outstanding. But I feel like we could have a little bit of a fun, and this is going to be Jamie and you playing. I want to put this to the test. And some of this stuff we've talked.
Definitely going to be the loser in this.
So ironically, the episode that we're going to call this episode "Wieners and Losers" because I feel there are people that are clearly more knowledgeable. That's Bill, and then there's us, which are just amateurs. But a couple of fun facts. We've touched on some of this, but just to kind of to bring in some closure here. This is actually, this first one is from the NHDSC, which is the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council. Real organization, by the way.
That even existed.
Jamie, neither did I until I was prepping for this episode, but it is a real thing. They state that anyone over the age of 18 should not put this on a hot dog.
Gotcha.
Jamie, what do you think?
Maple syrup.
It is ketchup. And that kind of goes in the face of what most people probably put on their hot dogs. But according to, again, the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council, real thing, if you're over 18, no ketchup on your dog. That's the rule. Next question is, in 2023, this world champion ate 63 hot dogs at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, which is disturbing. Disturbing. But does anyone know who that world champion is?
God, I forgot his name.
It is weirdly difficult to forget once you hear it. It's not.
He's a repeat winner. He's a repeat offender.
In 2018, he ate in the 70s, which is I don't know what the time frame is, but it's not a lot of time. And it's in those contests, they're dipping the whole thing in water. So it's making it. So, Jamie, do you know who this guy is? It is a guy.
I'm pretty sure they covered it on the news, but I don't know.
It is world champion Joey Chestnut.
Chestnut.
Which is whatever.
That's an awesome name.
Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're going to be a hot dog champion, all right. So over 500 years ago, this place claims to have invented the hot dog.
I would say, oh, do you have an answer? Go ahead.
Europe, but I don't know.
Europe in general.
More specifically, I would say Frankfurt.
It is Frankfurt.
They battle between Frankfurt and Vienna, but Frankfurt actually had like a 500th anniversary hot dog celebration or something.
Weirdly.
I was in the right country on that one.
Yeah, right?
Right continent.
Yes,
good to go.
Chef, you country. Oh my gosh, this is not going well for me at all.
No, you're good, Chef. You're good. So, Chef, you mentioned earlier a Chicago hot dog, which I actually think is one of my favorites, and how it has a poppy seed bun. Poppy seed bun. Can you name all of the toppings on a Chicago dog?
Ooh, I think so. So first off, you gotta have that bright, bright relish. You need sport peppers. Gotta have a slice of tomato sliced in half. There is celery salt on that bad boy too. I'm trying to think if there was, God dang it, if there was anything else on that thing.
That's
like you're thinking jardiniere, but jardiniere is on the Italian hot beef in Chicago. So
I like how like you kind of threw that out there with a little Midwestern accent. Like you could tell.
Oh, yeah. I come from the Great Lakes there. Yeah.
So the toppings are, according to Google, yellow mustard, chopped white onions, bright green, dare I say nuclear green.
Neon.
an entire dill pickle spear, which is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Sport peppers, tomato slices, and a dash of celery salt. My story on the Chicago hot dog, for some reason, I was in Chicago, this was probably 5 years ago, and I actually went to a Cubs game because I'm like, I'm going to go to Wrigley and I want to see it. And I had a hot dog, Chicago hot dog, in like the first inning. And the people that were sitting next to me weren't, they were just kind of coming and going. So I actually sat next to two or three different people throughout the game. And so the entire game, like I'm talking to different people, I'm engaging in conversation. And then at the end, I get back on the train, the subway, the L to go back to my hotel. And I can see my reflection in the mirror and I have mustard on my face. So I immediately am thinking there were multiple people that sat next to me and had conversations with me for an entire baseball game and didn't tell me that I had mustard on my face. It was awkward.
That's the Midwest nice there. Too nice to tell you.
Too nice to tell you. Or they were just
a chance to answer the question, by the way.
Jamie, that is 100% on me. Can I ask a question? Would you have gotten it right?
No. I wanted the chance to speak.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, Jamie, you know what? I'm gonna go ahead. Go. Sorry.
I did live in Chicago, and I've been there multiple times, and I love Chicago, but I've never had a Chicago style hot dog. But I also don't eat raw onions, so I don't know if I would.
It is really, really good. Like you would think, and it goes back to Chef's point that, like, you know, it was born out of necessity because it was basically poor times. How can we put as much on this as possible to get sustenance? And you would think with all those ingredients, it's gross, but it's strangely good.
We didn't even touch on the chili dog.
Ooh. Well, it's a Rhode Island. I mean, kind of like a meat sauce, chili dog, Rhode Islandy type thing. I mean, they do a meat sauce.
New Englandy, yes, but
chili cheese dog. Jamie, this next question is going to be directly for you. And then if you don't get it, Bill. No. I think this is in your wheelhouse.
Okay.
So, which restaurant gained notoriety by surprising guests with a New York style hot dog during their fine dining experience? It's in New York.
I mean, okay, thank you, because that's not where my brain went.
It's in New York. It is known for service.
Per se.
It's a great guess. But no. What's one guess? Chef, what do you think? Any
would this chef happen to also have a high-end hot dog cart outside of one of his restaurants too? Makes his own mustard and all that.
I don't know. He might.
I'm trying to think of a name of a restaurant that he has.
I tell you that this was years ago, and this restaurant now is entirely plant-based.
Okay, no, that's not what I'm thinking at all.
Jamie, you want another guess?
Yeah, it's EMP then.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So this is actually part of the Will Gadara Unreasonable Hospitality book, where he talks about overhearing a guest and, you know, had all these great meals. You know, what Bernadette might have been on there, I don't know, but and they just haven't had a hot dog. So they ran out and got a hot dog, chunked it up, and they recreated this in the bear too. So it was just interesting. You know, that, you know, you can have all these great meals, but people still want that experience.
You know, the, actually in Boston, like 10 years ago, Menton was doing fine dining hot dogs. They were doing like foie gras hot dogs at their Gold Bar.
That's
they elevated the dog. Yeah,
I remember that article, and they had like they were doing like lobster roll dogs, where they kind of combined it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting on the foie gras, like that famous Chicago institution, Hot Dogs. They got shut down because they served foie gras dogs. I think when it was banned in Chicago or something. Which, you know what? Damn the man. Like that was the right call. You know, whatever. Anyway, Chef, this was fun. I appreciate you talking all things.
All things
hot dogs. Thanks again for taking the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Who the wiener is and who the loser is? So,
Chef Lenway is the wiener. We are certainly.
You are what you eat, apparently. But
listen, your trophy is in the mail, so don't be surprised when it shows up at your front door. Thanks, Chef. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you much. Take care.
Special thanks again to Chef Bo Lundway for joining us to talk all things hot dogs. Make sure you check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts streaming. Also, shoot us an email or leave us a comment via social media at culinarynowpodcast at gmail.com if it's an email. We'd love to hear feedback from you. You can ask us questions that we can answer on the air. Also, check out Matt Burns, who does all the music for the Culinary Podcast. His new album, Whistle By, is fantastic. Always eternally grateful for his support musically.
And this was one of our favorite episodes to record. If it was one of your favorites to listen to, please leave us a 5-star review. It definitely helps our podcast get seen and put out to more people. You can always follow us on Instagram as well at Culinary Now Podcast.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.